She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and I hope you caught that piece about we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. I just envision a world where everybody becomes a conscious thinker, and we will certainly shift the planet forward on that great day. And thank you so much for joining us today. This show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, and as always, I do a shout out and a sincere thank you to them for that. We are in the final days of Earth Month, and hopefully the planet has shifted forward in significant ways this month as it relates to our environment, and hopefully they are sustainable shifts, because on Mrs. Green's World, every day is Earth Day. We have another truly great, impressive guest today leading an organization that I say is watching out for all of us and whose efforts making a difference for the planet through their efforts in so many areas, such a myriad of ways, protecting our water and our food supply. And I can't think of anything more important than that. And from where I sit, what is more important? We have the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org, Winona Howder. Winona, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
And I always think it's great to give our guests and to remind me of, let's have an overview of Food and Water Watch. You've been around for quite a while. The organization has grown. So let's kind of set the scene for what is the magnitude and scope and your mission of Food and Water Watch.
Well, Food and Water Watch believes that it's time to start fighting for what we want, not the best that can be negotiated in places like Washington, D.C. We need to build a real movement to make the changes necessary so that we can have safe water, safe food, and access to everything that people need. So we have 16 offices in the United States, and we're focused on really bringing grassroots action to these issues. Right now we're working on building public awareness that a farm bill is going to be voted on in this year's Congress, working on fracking, a really critical issue today, because we're really facing a time when there's every attempt made to profit from all of our most basic resources and the things that we need for life. And so we need to really build a political movement to try to take back our political system.
And make people accountable. I mean, that's one of your mantras. To me, sometimes when I interview guests like you on the show, you're talking about our basic rights as citizens for clean food and water.
That's exactly right.
People don't even get that we're being stampeded like a herd of elephants on our farmland about this. And it's like, okay, let's wake them up and shake them up a little bit today. I know that you've had some unbelievable successes, and I think that's really good to talk about that before we get into the major topic of the show today, which is going to be fracking. But you've helped stop Starbucks from using hormone in their milk. You know, using milk that has hormone injections, and supporting the small farmers, the local guy that needs to be protected from big government. So can you talk a little bit about some of your successes?
Well, sure. We did a two-year campaign focused on Starbucks because they are a very large user of milk, and we felt that if you can affect Starbucks' procurement policies, that you can really influence the entire industry. And we were and continue to be very concerned about genetic engineering, and the dairy industry was using a hormone to increase production.
Right.
So after 2 years of putting pressure, of working with grassroots organizations, students, local community groups to go to those Starbucks and demand that they stop using hormones, we were able to win after this campaign. And this is what I mean about involving large numbers of people. We need to really empower people to take these kinds of actions to change their to fight for their own health and to make the changes necessary to protect their families.
And I sound like a broken record, but I see the evidence that when people are mobilized to action, it doesn't take a million people. If you know, I know that in some Congress offices, if they get calls from 30 people, a congressman or a senator will start looking at it. And I know we're talking about much more massive numbers when it comes to fracking, because we've got some big companies with big bucks that we're taking on. It's a David and Goliath, but I always tell people, remember how that story ended up.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. So let's go. When you... The myriad of issues to me are so vast when you sit in where I do in Mrs. Green's world and deciding on which guest interview about what. How do you at Food and Water Watch vet the issues and decide, okay, we're going to take this on, we're going to mount an effort? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. There are so many different areas with GMOs and the, you know, they just did the food lunch bill, which was to me disappointing, a little bit of progress, but there's clean water, there is fracking, there's the compromising issues around coal and the dirty coal burning plants that affect water supplies and you know, use massive amounts of water. So how do you, sitting as the executive director, how does your team vet?
Well, you know, we believe that our role is to really create the political space to have a discussion so that we can get more than we generally do from the compromises that are made. So we want to create this space, for instance, with fracking. It's a good issue to talk about. We believe that if you start having a discussion about regulation, the way that public policy unfolds is then you get pretty weak regulation because it's going to be a compromise. So we want to take on issues that other organizations are afraid to deal with or don't have the resources to deal with, and then try to create enough space and get enough people involved that we can really turn the tide. And, you know, I feel like we've done that on several issues. One of them is water privatization. There was really an attempt to come into the U.S. And then mid to late 90s and start privatizing all of our municipal water systems, even though these foreign companies had a really bad track record. We helped organize in many communities and stopped a large wave of that, although it is still happening and we still do work on that issue. But there's a reluctance to take on issues where you're really challenging market-based schemes, and we feel that that's our role. And fracking is certainly one of these schemes that is being promoted as a way to help solve environmental problems because gas is less polluting. So we believe it's really important to talk about the broader issues and to get people engaged in them.
And, you know, just think about it. When you're saying that about privatization of water to companies outside the U.S., like, I don't say I'm afraid much. I don't live in a fear space at all. But I really don't want anybody to, any foreign interest to control our water supply. How important is it to maintain public control over local water systems? I mean, that's going to be a continuing hot topic, if you ask me.
It is, and we're facing an even bleaker future if we're not able to stop the newest plans, which are really around this process for the Rio Earth Summit. If you'll remember, 20 years ago, there was an Earth Summit, and now there's going to be another one on the anniversary. It's going to be held in June. And in the negotiations over the last couple of years leading up to this, it's become very clear that the most powerful financial interests in the world have determined that we should do what we call financialized nature. It's basically using trading, risk, and different financial products to around nature to make a profit, because it's in our current world, it's more profitable than manufacturing or even trading goods to trade these financial instruments. And so they're promoting things like emission trading, water pollution emissions, and a whole range of these market-based mechanisms that are designed by Wall Street to really make a profit, not to protect nature. So I think that's going to be one of the next issues on the horizon that we're going to want to really focus on, because we don't want to cede regulation of pollution to these schemes that aren't going to really correct the problems.
And, you know, the time for all of these things to me seems to be accelerating. You've got the whole Wall Street crowd where everything is earnings per share, and people are not sleeping, but the consciousness, the awareness, it's not making the front page to get people on board about this is your water, people. This is what you drink. This is what feeds the crops. And, you know, I've had Robert Glennon on my show. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Oh, I am, yeah.
And he, you know, the first time I had him on, he talked about things like the water wars and the water rights that are being rapidly brought up that we can't stop, you know, in former mining sites or whatever. And it just, it's my passion. It just fuels my passion to get people just wake up. Okay, so let's talk about fracking, because I think that that will be a majority of the show, and I think that it's important to give a little bit of history, because there was a time when there were doing vertical drilling of wells and gas was extracted, and it wasn't a news, nor was it an environmental issue from what my research shows. So is that we used to extract it one way, now there's fracking. It's you know, I told you I wrote a blog, What the Frack? Why are we doing this?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of misinformation out there. You may hear people like T. Boone Pickens, the oil billionaire, say that, oh, I've been fracking since 1949.
Right.
Well, in reality, all of the technologies necessary to frack became available after the turn of the 21st century. So I'm talking about the ability to not only drill a mile or deeper into the earth, but to drill vertically like that, and then to go the same distance horizontally. The use of chemicals, there are, according to a congressional study, more than 750 chemicals that the industry figured out could be used to help loosen the gas reserves, and many of these are very poisonous. The use of high pressure water, sand, and chemicals, this is called slick water, in cooperation with this drilling method is what has actually made fracking possible. And it really started being used about 2006 and 2007. It had been experimented with before then, but that's what made it actually financially feasible to do this type of drilling. And then the additional technology that was added on was the use of multi-pad wells. You can have up to 50 wells on one pad, and that lowers the cost. So fracking is really using these chemicals, which range from things like benzene to lead, combining it with millions and millions of gallons of water, and then using high pressure to go deep into the earth. It's like it's something like a pipe bomb underneath the ground to fracture the shale rock and release the natural gas.
And let me just ask you this. The chemicals, I know there are, in most companies, the gas companies, don't even disclose what they're using in terms of the chemicals. Do they serve, since I don't have a chemistry background, do the chemicals help to break down the rock in order to be able to access the natural gas deposits?
Right. They play different roles necessary in loosening the gas and making the drilling possible. And no, the companies don't have to disclose what the chemicals are. We actually know about the 750 different chemicals because there was a congressional study that released this information.
And then it leads down the, you know, to me, the rabbit hole of thinking. And I don't know if you heard the intro to my show. We don't want to tell you what to think. We just want you to. So you imagine this massive use of water disrupting the environment, going through the shale, creating explosions, which is, you know, still totally untried practices in terms of the impact it could have. So then I think about, we think in silos. What about the dangers of the chemicals and all of those things leaching? I mean, uranium. I did a whole show with some tribal leaders on uranium, and it's a radioactive waste. Are we protected from that in the fracking process? It's like, it drives me crazy.
Well, no. I mean, that's one of the problems. The rapid increase in fracking wells has really polluted drinking water supplies and waterways. The wells can experience a rupture or a blowback under this tremendous pressure, and it spills the chemical-laden water into the surface water or groundwater. This has been documented now even by EPA in Pavilion, Wyoming, when the residents of the communities where there was drilling going on there demanded that EPA come in and actually do some testing, because there's so much pressure on the agency. We haven't really seen a proper analysis. And what happens is the natural gas and the chemicals can migrate into the aquifers, into the wells. And then there are the spills and the leaks and the accidents on the surface that can pollute the waterways. A gas industry attorney actually admitted in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette column that, this is a quote, if improperly handled, used fracking fluid can contaminate surface water just like any other liquid waste from drilling operations. So, you know, we've seen this around the country. Chemicals in the fracking fluid have contaminated the water supplies near gas wells. We've seen livestock die from drinking water tainted with spilled fracking fluids. In West Virginia, authorities have been investigating whether fracking fluids called fish kills that left a creek absolutely lifeless. But despite these problems, the industry maintains that fracking is safe. Unfortunately, because of all the pressure on the Environmental Protection Agency, we just haven't seen the vigilance that we should. And fracking fluid often contains diesel fuel, which has as one of its components benzene and other toxic chemicals that are proven carcinogens. And we don't really know what happens to all this fracking fluid. Depends on the shale and the rock formations. But we know that only 30 to 70% of it actually come back to the surface. Now, when it comes back to the surface, that's a major problem because they don't know what to do with it. And in Pennsylvania, it turns out that over the course of a couple of years, 1.3 billion gallons got sent to municipal waste facilities run by municipal governments, facilities that didn't have the ability to get rid of the chemical or the radiological contamination.
Okay, we have to take a very short break, and I will hold that thought when we come back. We are having a most compelling discussion with Winona Howder, who is the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org. Please stay here with me. I'm sure you're going to want to. We will be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill. But I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. We are so absolutely and positively blessed to have with us today the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org, Winona Howder. And I just have to do a little shout out because my team reminds me every other Friday, don't forget to listen to me here live every Saturday at noon Pacific Standard Time at mrsgreensworld.com. And remind you also that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid, which I think is absolutely wonderful. And if you do have to miss, please remember that all of my shows live on my website. You can download the podcast for your listening pleasure. And the best thing to do is follow me, connect with me on Facebook and Twitter, and email me info@mrsgreensworld.com if you have questions about today's show or anything of a green nature. So I had to do that little shout out. We've got just so many things to talk about for fracking. And, you know, Winona, I don't get down about things very often, but this fracking to me is so clearly it's daunting, it's filthy, it's pervasive, and I don't understand. Maybe a good way to start is, why is there exemption after exemption from the federal government for laws that protect our drinking water? Why is the gas companies exempt? No matter what research I do, I know it's power and money and earnings per share, but how did this one dodge any type of EPA or any regulations? I don't get it.
Well, what happened with fracking is that when the Bush administration was in office, Dick Cheney, you'll remember, brought together a committee of energy executives to talk about energy policy. And Cheney's previous employer was Halberton,
right.
One of the companies that actually developed some of the technologies used for fracking. And so he was able to help manipulate a loophole for fracking. And I think one of the things that's been so problematic is generally, well, many people have felt that fracking was a, or not fracking, that natural gas was a better fossil fuel alternative than some of the others, and that it was an alternative that could help transition into a sustainable future. But unfortunately, with fracking, this just isn't the case with all of the many problems associated with it. And yet we don't have the regulatory structure to protect the communities from fracking. And what happened in 2004, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, under the Bush administration, released a study focused on coal bed methane reservoirs, and they concluded that fracking posed little or no threat to underground drinking water sources. Now, that study has been widely discredited for ignoring all of the case studies that that existed even at that time. But nevertheless, the flaws of the study were basically enshrined into law when fracking was exempted from provisions of the Safe Drinking Water Act. The Energy Policy Act of 2005, that was the law that Cheney had brought all of these executives together to strategize about, and it exempted the oil and gas industry from a wide range of federal environmental regulation. So that is really an outrage. We believe, though, that fracking is so dangerous that it probably is, and there are so many unknowns, that it probably can't even be safely regulated. And we would really like to see the practice banned in as many places as is possible.
And what the companies say, that this just absolutely and positively drives me crazy. The advertisements on TV, the advertisements when you read in anything, even in the Wall Street Journal or in magazines, they do the whole, this is in our, you know, it's not foreign oil dependency, it's a natural resource, we're getting it out of the ground. It's this whole bunch of garbage about it's ours and we're doing it and we care about the country. And I just, you know, it would be a great YouTube video, me screaming at the TV saying,
right.
Are you joking?
They really aren't recognizing a lot of the other problems either. I mean, one of the things that we don't talk a lot about is the radioactivity. Turns out that the natural gas that is going to be obtained from the Marcellus Shale out of New York, Pennsylvania, and those areas has very high levels of radon, because when you go that deep underground, there's a lot of radioactivity. Now, usually when natural gas is piped places, it goes a long distance and the radioactivity goes away. But with this short distance piping it to places like New York City, people could actually eventually be exposed to radon, which is the second largest cause of lung disease or lung cancer after cigarette smoking, in their small living spaces. And that's not the only pollution that comes from it. Gas fracking emits all sorts of greenhouse gases and smog-inducing compounds and potentially carcinogenic air emissions. A 2011 Cornell University study found that shale gas has a greater greenhouse footprint than conventional gas and oil. And then there's all the smog. Wyoming, I think we all know that Wyoming is a very rural state. It doesn't have the traffic we see in many urban areas.
Right.
Turns out that Wyoming, over the course of time that fracking has been done, has had so much smog that it hasn't met the Clean Air Act standards. I mean, that's pretty shocking, but
especially since the standards aren't even that high. Right. I had to get that little dig in. I'm sorry.
It's like if
you're violating that, whoa, that's really bad. Okay, so you're talking about, I want to go back to a minute for New York. I mean, I read, I just want to do an absolutely boundless, or what I can't even find the right words for, the impressive website you have. It's so easy to navigate. It is content rich. Major kudos to you, to your team, for providing information that the public can understand easily. So I want to say any listener, please go to foodandwaterwatch.org for education on a myriad of these issues. But in one video I watched, there's a lot of great short YouTube videos. Was I right in capturing 77,000 wells in just one area of New York? You talk about
That's
collateral damage.
Oh, they're proposing massive drilling in New York, but fracking hasn't started in New York yet. It's Pennsylvania that's been the real sacrifice zone. But there's a whole process going on in New York to try to start fracking. And one of the ironies you brought up earlier, and that is that the shale gas rush isn't just a danger to public health, but also to local economies, because you know, the industry constantly promotes the job creation and the local investment, and the proponents typically don't account for any of the long-term economic damage or the erosion of communities' quality of life that can outweigh any benefits. But most of these economic benefits that they tout are, I mean, they're a mirage, because distant energy companies don't buy from local businesses, and out-of-town workers with experience in the oil industry tend to fill the short-term jobs. So what ends up happening is that these new wells bring fleets and fleets of trucks that they crowd and they damage the rural roads, and they carry this potentially hazardous wastewater. The noise, I mean, we've talked to people who live near these drilling rigs. They operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and these beautiful scenic vistas in Pennsylvania have been replaced with this landscape of gas wells, and that lowers the property values. It harms tourism and recreation. I mean, and this is not just true in Pennsylvania. Wise County, Texas, is an example of this. Where properties have become devalued because of all of the rigs and the pollution. And so it's a real issue for communities because in the long term, their residents are going to be hurt by their lower property values. And, you know, I think anybody who's studied the oil industry knows that there's always a boom, and then comes the bust. And most of these economic gains are just, they're very short. They're very, very short-lived. You know, they're mostly during the construction and drilling period. And what we see when that happens is that's when the trucks start moving in, and sometimes it takes 1,000 heavy truck trips over, you know, the course of a few months to bring in all of the equipment and to do all of the construction that's necessary to develop these wells. And, you know, it's pretty sad that the state of farming in this country is such that farmers who depend on the health of the land have such a stark choice that they're basically selling these leases to the oil and gas industry. I mean, that is a a very sad commentary. And I guess the one of the most interesting and but disgusting aspects of the economics of this is that natural gas is at a record low price now in the
exactly.
United States.
It's not even.
And so the benefit to these companies is not selling natural gas. It's developing the wells and then selling the leases. And they're selling the leases to countries like China. I mean, China has bought $2.1 billion of leases. And so this is, it's a type of a Ponzi scheme. And we've even seen this written about in the New York Times.
And sometimes when I have a guest on like you, I think about the book that we should all write called While You Were Sleeping, because people are sleeping and we're going to wake up and the shocking things that are going to be discovered that are going on right now. Let's talk a minute, if you will, about the film Gasland, because what was important to me about that film is that it was on HBO. It got to mainstream TV. And I know it created controversy, but some of the things in that movie that I remember, and doesn't one well use over 3 million gallons of water for a single well when they're doing it?
Absolutely.
3 million.
What happens is that fracking uses 100 times more water than conventional drilling. So we're talking about trillions and trillions of gallons of water will be used if all of the fracking is done that the industry hopes to do. And, you know, what is really disturbing is this year in May, there's going to be a summit in Dubai, and it's going to, the title of it is the Summit on Oil, on Water, Oil, and Natural Gas. And it's all about the profit that the water industry can make from fracking and from drilling. And I attended, in fact, I debated an industry person who is in favor of privatization at this industry conference. And at that conference, fracking was named as the number one source of money for the water industry. And these are the same companies that are focused on privatizing municipal water systems. They'd also like to develop all sorts of facilities for, you know, cleaning the wastewater and for building pipes to take water to fracking sites. I mean, this is really, really disturbing.
And you used a word a little while ago, like there parts of this are like disgusting and repulsive. Those are words I don't use frequently on the show, but it's such an emotional issue to me, not just a yeah. cerebral issue, but it's heinous. I mean, I try to think of words when I'm writing about fracking, and I did write a blog that, you know, there were some people that were interviewed in one of the things I researched where there was this, you know, a professor that said, you know, I'm your neighbor, I'm your this, I'm your that, I don't have any public interest, no private interest in this, and I think there are some upsides to fracking. And I, you know, went down that rabbit hole. But in the past year, there is no upside to fracking except profit. Is there anything that's an upside, like, that you can...
Well, you know, I think it's a misplacement of priorities, because to move all of this natural gas, and really the whole strategy is not to use it in the U.S. When you really study their plans, this is about importing or exporting natural gas, and there are plans to build pipes all over the East Coast, and also these terminals on the coast to export natural gas to Europe. So a lot of this for the future is a strategy around sending our fossil fuels outside of the country. And it's a misplaced priority to be spending federal dollars in these lean times on these infrastructure projects that are going to make us more dependent on fossil fuels into the future, rather than spending the money today to create infrastructure, to do the research, and to
exactly.
Really,
we have to take another short break, and there's so much more to cover. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back. Winona Howder from foodandwaterwatch.org.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if this show isn't giving you a lot to think about, I would think about that. please don't forget to listen to me every Saturday right here at 12 at MrsGreensWorld.com. And follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You can listen to me on your iPhone or Droid. And if you miss the show, this is one you will certainly want to download, and I'll be tweeting and Facebooking about that. Our guest today is the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org, which is an organization that I need to point out does not take any corporate or government funding. So they are what I call pure in their advocacy for all of us. You, Winona Howder, are representing the American people. And it was so clear to me when I came across your organization in my journey as Mrs. Green and said to Kelly, we have to get them on the show. So we're talking about fracking. I find myself a bit, this is probably the most quiet I've ever been on any of my radio shows, because I want to hear everything that you have to say about fracking. And can we go a little bit more into collateral damage? There's trucking, there's disruption of wildlife. I would assume that there are issues about flood control. You can't just go into areas and disrupt everything. It's like the stripping of the trees in the rainforest. That's bad, but when the rain comes, it's even worse because of erosion. So can we talk a little bit about collateral damage?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the communities that have to live through fracking, you're basically making industrial sites out of rural communities. And the damage differs depending on the landscape and the climate. So in the Northeast and places where there's more rainfall, the damage from fracking is more around flooding, and what do you do with all of the wastewater, and what happens to the wastewater in the dry southeast in places like Texas or Arizona, for that matter. In Arizona, the Piance, I think that's how you pronounce it, you probably know, the Piance Basin is just at the tip of the northeast corner of Arizona, and it has shale. So far, we don't believe that there's a lot of fracking going on in Arizona, but certainly in Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Texas, the collateral damage almost has to do with the wasting of water, because unlike agriculture or municipal uses of water, water used for fracking doesn't return to the hydrogeological system. It stays underground, and it's often polluted beyond being able to reclaim. And that is a really terrible situation, especially as we move into climate change, and we know that climate change is going to be have all sorts of terrible impacts as far as having enough water. I mean, I think the other thing that we haven't touched upon is that this isn't just something that's happening in the United States. There is a worldwide attempt, because you have the biggest oil companies in the world wanting to get into this, into fracking. Excuse me. And so we're seeing fracking taking place in places around the world and also being promoted in other places of, around the world. So, for instance, in Europe, there is a major fight going on because Poland wants to be able to frack. Poland, if you know its history, is very sensitive to the issue of being dependent on Russia for natural gas.
Right.
And much of the natural gas for Russia, I mean for Europe, comes from Russia, and the pipeline actually bypassed Poland. And so the Polish government wants to do major, major fracking, and there's a whole disinformation campaign going on in Poland. And unlike in the United States, in Europe, countries own the resources. The individuals who live on top of the land don't own the gas resources. So in Poland, there's a whole propaganda campaign going on about providing oil and gas, or oil, or rather natural gas for the future. And almost every week we're told there is some conference going on in the country with the oil and gas industry coming in and promoting it to policymakers. And we've already seen corruption. They were auctioning off the right to frack, and it turns out that there was a fraudulent relationship between some government officials and the industry that wanted to frack, and they gave a they were giving the right to frack to a company that had paid a bribe.
Well, you know, it is definitely a global issue, and to me, it's like we are a sealed envelope anyway. So what's bad happening in Wyoming is bad for the planet, and I just it's not random. And I meant to ask you this in the beginning of the show, and I did not. But when you go to your website, the issues that you are working on that affect our health about factory fish farming and about sustainable seafood and about genetically modified food and bottled water, there are many. And I want to say to our listeners, if you don't want to become the fracking specialist, go to foodandwaterwatch.org, because there are issues that each one of us should care about. But I want to know why you decided to pick fracking for the show. We're going to give it a lot of play. We're going to Facebook and tweet about it, anything to raise the consciousness. But why did you decide, is this one of the biggest issues facing us in our country today in terms of our quality of life?
I think it's one of the biggest issues, and it's a poster child for how the corporate and financial interests see the future.
It is.
You know, there's always been a lot of damage done in the developing world by these corporations. But now they've decided that it's okay to do it at home, too.
To bully us.
Massive sacrifice zones.
Right, right.
And so this is part of this financialization of nature. And we think that there was a very weak response initially by some of the environmental groups that generally take the lead on these issues, because they've promoted natural gas because they genuinely believed that it was better for the environment. And so we thought that there needed to be a strong national voice to step in and say, we need to ban this. Sometimes a technology, even if it's profitable, is so dangerous that we need to say no. And we know from our work in many, many states on this issue that lots of grassroots organizations and millions of people share our belief that fracking needs to be banned and is too dangerous to pursue. And so we want to try to give some backbone to our elected members of Congress, and for that matter, President Obama, who I think we all know has embraced the natural gas industry, and as the in the run-up to the election is unfortunately allowing this greenwashing to move forward and is speaking in favor of this kind of technology. So I think it's really important that there be voices to, as I said earlier, expand the political space for doing more than trying to negotiate another bad deal for the environment.
And I know I use the word bullying. That's what it just feels like. It's bullying, and you know, the name of the book, While We Were Sleeping. It's just incredible that you pick this. Let's go a little bit to, you said you have 16 offices throughout the United States. When you go into a community, like if you Pennsylvania or New York, is your strategy to connect with like-minded organizations? What is the on-the-ground grassroots strategy when Food and Water Watch decides to take on an issue? How do you pump up the volume?
Well, in part, we've selected the offices where or the locations for our offices based on our long-term legislative agenda, and part of that agenda is really addressing the problems in our food system. And, you know, we live at a time when there's a nexus between energy, water, and food. And so we think it's critically important that if we're going to solve many of the problems that face our society, that it be possible for farmers to make a living again and for communities, rural communities, to become stable and to be able to survive into the future. I mean, we know that young people are moving from rural communities. We think that food production is extremely important, that being a shepherd of the land is important. And so we selected places that we believe in the long term are going to be important on federal farm policy, because every 5 years a farm bill is voted on.
Right.
And we did a 50-year analysis of the last farm bills and the legislative committees that were involved, the agriculture committees in Congress that were involved in the passage of that legislation, which is basically written in those committees. And they tend to be the same places. And so we selected places like Iowa and Michigan and places that may not be on the top tier for most national groups to open offices. And, of course, we would like to have a lot more offices, but there are a number of things that go into raising the money to have an office. And we want to become in the future dependent on our membership. I mean, we want to be an organization that isn't driven by what foundations want or the places that, you know, the public interest organizations generally have to go to fund themselves. We think that tithing is important, and that if people truly want public interest voices out there, then it's important that people join and become members, and then hold the organizations responsible for the positions that they take.
And if people, I mean, to me, it's like to join your organization, I think it's to become a member is, I don't know, is it $30, $35?
Yeah, it's $35. You know, we basically, any contribution. But, you know, we like people to join our listservs. One of the ways that we are able to activate people is we send out messages on the issues that we're working on. We try not to send too many. And the other thing that we're doing, especially in the states where we have offices, is we have an opportunity for people to get deeply involved. We have a volunteer program where people become coordinators in their community, and they can do outreach to other people who can become activists. And that way we can magnify our organizing capabilities, because let's face it, it's great to do the research and to have the great website and to do all of the things that we and a lot of other organizations do. But if we're really and truly going to change this country, we need people to be activated in every state and in every congressional district to hold these people responsible who are supposed to be voting our self-interest.
And to me, it's so, first of all, there's the whole power of social media. And I have seen some and written some blogs about, if you don't think your voice counts, here's some facts about legislation that has been stopped, about a million signatures being gathered in a four-day period. So getting connected, to me, is the first step. Find organizations like yours that really speak to the things you care about as a citizen, and then stay involved. I think that's absolutely huge. And then the other piece to that becomes, do some, I call them, you know, bite-sized chunks. Take on what you can. This is not a full-time job. If you are asked, you know, people, your organizations make it so easy. Click here to vote. Click here to name your, you know, to add your name to the petition. You don't have to say, oh, I have so many things to do. You could dedicate 3 minutes a day and make a massive difference by activating the matrix. It's just, I hope that this show will inspire people to action. What's the best call to action that you think people can do with you? Is it become a member stay connected through social media?
Well, I think it depends where people live. I mean, there are a number of states where there are important fracking campaigns going on. You can go to our website and look at the map about where resolutions have been passed. If you live in a state where there's not a state campaign, we are urging people to pass community resolutions, because everything starts at the local level.
Right, be proactive.
Right. Community resolutions to ban fracking, because we want to show that there is a wave of interest in banning this dangerous technology. And, you know, I think there's something for everyone to do depending on the amount of time. And I think it's so important that you have this show and that we have an alternative media, since it's so difficult to get the real story on the mainstream media today, especially as it's under financial pressure to, you know, we'll be lucky to have any newspapers left in the future.
Exactly.
So we need to have alternative sources of news and information.
And I think I want to make sure that before we go to shout out again and make people aware, if they just tuned in and they want to rewind it, to listen to the podcast. We have had a compelling, ongoing, exciting discussion with Winona Howder, who's the executive director of foodandwaterwatch.org. And that is the website. It's spelled out, foodandwaterwatch.org, a very compelling website. It brings you in. Winona, when you look at that map of the planned fracking areas, it's a pretty big part of our country. So thank you for being with us today. Next week, Michael Tompkins, the president and general manager of Miraval Resorts, talking about living life in balance and the opening of their new spa. Please remember, I'm here live every Saturday at noon. And Winona, thank you for that shout out. I think that what I'm doing and the voices of the radio are so important. So thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World today. And I wish you nothing but success.
Thanks so much for inviting me to be here.
I'll be watching.
Okay, bye-bye.
Make it a great green week, everybody.